G'day friends, I'm Anissa Hill and welcome to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. Here we tell the stories of people who have done just that, moved to Costa Rica. In episode 26, we chat to Tricia Hefner, a 36-year-old from California. Tricia talks about her decision to leave Los Angeles, what she learned after moving to a country she had never visited, as well as the process of importing two cats to Costa Rica. If you'd like to watch the video of this episode, go to YouTube and subscribe to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. Before we dive in, remember new episodes are released every Thursday. Head to www.movetocostaricapodcast.com. Without any further delay, here is your host, Malcolm Hill.
G'day friends and welcome to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. Today with me, I have Tricia Faye Hefner.
Lee, thank you so much for having me, Malcolm.
Tricia, you're an award-winning author, creative coach and speaker. You also hold a master's degree in humanistic psychology, specializing in creative studies. How did you and your husband end up here in Costa Rica?
Oh, that is such a great question, Malcolm. I have a variety of answers to that one. But basically, we were living in Los Angeles, and I really love Los Angeles. I loved living there, but it was just very expensive, and the cost of living there kept going up, and our creative work there was flourishing, but never at the pace that the cost of living was flourishing, if that makes sense. So we run an organization called the Poetry Salon, and we facilitate creative writing classes and workshops for writers, mainly adult writers, although we do work with kids from time to time. And there are a lot of writers and creative people in Los Angeles, so it was a perfect place for us. But as I said, the cost of living was just going up every year, and we just couldn't keep up with it. And so eventually I talked with my husband for a long time. We were talking about leaving Los Angeles and maybe trying to put our business online so that we could be mobile. And what's really interesting is we had settled on Oregon. We were thinking about moving to some place in the suburbs of Portland, because it's also a very creative place and the cost of living is a little lower there. And I just had this feeling in the pit of my stomach every time I thought about it that was like, no, I don't want to be in Oregon. And it's, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about it. I loved Portland. That's why we chose to move there. We were heading in that direction. I love the place. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's very creative. There's just tons of great coffee shops, which as a writer, that's really all I need is creative people and good coffee shops. But every time I thought about moving there, just something inside of me said, I'm not happy about this. I'm not excited. And when I would go to the beach, or look at tropical environments of any kind, I felt very uplifted. And I would think that's where I want to be. I want to be someplace tropical. I want warmth. I want coconuts. It's really impractical. So I think I was standing in our hallway in our tiny little apartment in Los Angeles. And I finally just said, you know what? I don't want to move to Portland right now. I want to be in a tropical environment. I want to be an expat. I want to explore the world a little bit more and live somewhere in a foreign country at least once before we settle down anywhere. And I have a family member, friend of a friend of a family member who had lived in Costa Rica for a number of years and had really good things to say about it. So I naturally gravitated to Costa Rica and started doing a little research. And my husband was very reluctant. It's just so impractical, so out of his wheelhouse. But I think what really changed for us is I showed him the cost of renting a house on the beach. And he said, okay, I think we can do this for a little while. So initially I had planned for us to, you know, fly down to Costa Rica and check out a couple of places and maybe even take a look at, where were the other countries? We were thinking about possibly Mexico or Belize or Costa Rica. We'd kind of narrowed it down to those three countries. And my husband said, you know what? You seem pretty determined that we're going to move to one of these places. Let's not bother going to do research first, on the grounds research. Let's just pack everything up and go. I know you when you have a determination like this. I'm not going to be able to talk you out of it anyways. So let's you know, save money on that first trip down there and just pack everything up and go and live there. And so that's pretty much what we did. And that was a year and a half ago. And considering everything that's happened with the pandemic and so forth, I'm very grateful to be here right now, rather than almost anywhere else in the world.
I grew up on a dairy farm in rural New Zealand. And as you mentioned before our chat today, you grew up in a farming area in rural California.
Yes.
Tell us what it was like growing up in the country.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's so funny because, you know, when you grow up in the country or anywhere, and that's your only experience, you just think that it's normal. You know, it's like, I don't know. It was totally the only thing I really knew. And now as an adult, having lived in a city, having traveled around a little bit more, I do realize like what a strange experience it was. You know, I've actually grown up in several areas. We have a saying in my family, home isn't home until you hang the for sale sign. And my parents just are kind of restless nomads. They tend to move once every 4 years, but it's always been in these more or less kind of rural places in California. So my younger years were spent in the town of Paradise, California, which has some notoriety because it burned almost completely to the ground. I think 2 years ago now in, I forget the specific name of the fire, but yeah, it, you know, got a lot of press. So I grew up there, and prior to that, we were living in a place called Bangor, California, which is actually named after Bangor, Maine. But it's nothing like Maine. It's a town of, I think, 10 people and 100 cows. And it's very rural. And, you know, I don't know what it's like now, but I know when we were living there, there wasn't much going on. There was a school, there was a church, there was a gas station, there wasn't even a grocery store. If you needed to go buy groceries, you had to drive at least an hour out of town. So I spent a lot of my time just outdoors playing in the yard, you know. It was a big deal to be able, when I was at a certain age, to be able to walk to the back of our property because we had 5 acres, and the acre closest to the house was nice and safe. And it's where we kept the goats and the chickens. And, you know, you could yell if you saw a snake or something like that. And then the back part of the property had some woods to it. And then after you got through the woods, there was like a little creek that was fun to play in, and we could collect snails, like water snails, and put them in a jar. So I remember being young and wanting to go explore on my own. And my mom was always like, no, you can't go into the wooded part of the property. There are mountain lions, there are snakes, there are all kinds of dangerous things that are going to eat you. And finally, when I got, you know, old enough, she would let me go there on my own. And that was the adventure, you know, that was the big rite of passage, because there wasn't a whole lot else going on. If I wasn't in school, I was, you know, I was, in the yard picking blackberries, milking the goat. And at the time, I did not really appreciate these things. But looking back on it, having lived in a city, spending a lot of time with people who've only known city life, I realized, like, I'm really lucky. I gotta milk a goat. I gotta watch baby goats being born. I gotta watch baby pigs being born. I know how to, make my own goat cheese and blackberry jam and all these other things that a lot of my friends don't know because they didn't, you know, have the advantage of growing up in kind of a natural environment.
I guess you moved to Los Angeles to begin your career. I've read one of your beautiful poems on your website about Los Angeles.
Oh, thank you.
Could you paint a picture for us of just life in that massive metropolis?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Pick a street and I'll tell you a story. It's huge. It's amazing. And, you know, there's a lot that I love about Los Angeles. I think it has... to me, it's really interesting because it's one of the most valorized and the most villainized cities. It's got some of the best, you know, romantic imagery around it, and also some of the, you know, the darkest parts of society. And both are true. Both are accurate. It is a dynamic city. It takes you a day to cross from one end of the city to the other. And it's, well, first of all, Los Angeles is a county and there's lots of cities in between the county, you know, that make up the county. But going from, like, let's say Long Beach, which is not even part of Los Angeles County, up to, you know, North Hollywood or Altadena or Pasadena. I mean, these are all things we think of as being part of Los Angeles. I mean, it would take you hours, and in bad traffic, it could take you all day to get from one end to the other. And there's all these little neighborhoods, and you can go from watching the landscape change from these big mansions with pillars that look like Greek temples, if you're up in Beverly Hills and Brentwood in that area, down to the slummy areas within a matter of, you know, one single turn on the road. You know, you can go from like McDonald's and Taco Bell and tiny little shacks that cost $1 million. And then you make a right turn and you're in Brentwood. So it's a city that just is constantly startling. And I lived there for 8 years, and there are streets and neighborhoods and towns that I never even saw in those 8 years. And if I ever go back again, you know, I'll still have the opportunity to discover something I never noticed before.
How did you meet your husband?
We met at this kind of like weekend retreat that was about, you know, self-exploration and, delving into your heart and soul. I'm trying to think of a way of describing it that's accurate and not cheesy, and I don't know how to do that. But anyways, by the end of the weekend, it was just very clear that he and I had a lot in common. I think like 2 weeks later, I moved in with him. It was just that obvious to me that we needed to be together. And then 3 years later, I think it was a full 3 years later, we actually got married.
You and Alan, you'd never been here before. I'm curious to know what was going through your head, like when you decided to move to a country you'd never even visited.
Malcolm, this is not the first time I've done that, actually. It is the first time I've ever moved to a country I had never visited before with, by the way, a language that I do not speak. I did something similar when I first graduated from college. It's not as difficult as some people think that it is, you know, it's like the whole world has become pretty modernized. You know, you can find out what you need to find out from the internet. You can get where you need to go, by asking around.
Yeah. How did you know how much to bring?
Well, we didn't, and we made mistakes. That's the answer to that question. We brought, I think, as many suitcases as we thought we absolutely needed, and we brought a few books, and we, you know, we planned on going back for Christmas and getting some more things. And we actually had our friends subletting our apartment in Los Angeles because we didn't really know how long we wanted to stay. And we just figured we'd go back and get anything we needed at a later time. And then the pandemic hit and everything changed. Well, I joke with my husband because one of the things since moving to Costa Rica is we had two cats when we came, and we have three more that have adopted us. And they also cause a fair amount of chaos and worry, et cetera, et cetera. And I've told him, like, having five cats is the equivalent of having one child, right? I mean, in terms of the cost, the expense of, you know, kitty litter and food and vet bills, it's got to be the equivalent.
Tell us about what it took to get, was it five cats?
No. We didn't become insane until we moved here, as far as the cats go. No, the cats, we had two cats, when we lived in Los Angeles, in two cats in one small apartment, and that seemed reasonable at the time. And there are pet shipping services that will, do all the work for you, but, we didn't want to go that route and it's way more expensive. So we just had to have them in a kitty carrier and, one kitty carrier each and brought them through the airport. And, you know, like, again, the internet can be your friend. You just look up, all the different rules. They have to have shots beforehand. They have to have paperwork done. I really recommend, if you are planning on moving to Costa Rica with your pets, there's a website. I wish I could remember it, but it's been so long since we looked at it, that will actually give you like a calendar to follow to help you figure out what you need to do in advance to bring your pets down here, and all the rules and things like that. So we had a lot of help from the internet and from vets and from whoever else we had to ask to fill out paperwork. But it was an ordeal, you know, it was an ordeal. I think we gave our cats some CBD oil and some tranquilizers, and they still yowled for 5 hours on the airplane because they were in separate carriers. And so finally, even though this was not technically allowed, I opened up one carrier and put one cat in with the other, and he immediately calmed down. He just wanted to be with his little snuggle buddy. And once that happened, he calmed down a lot more, and we just spent 5 hours, you know, petting them and comforting them while they were on the airplane with us. And, you know, it's doable. It's doable.
Tricia, when you and Alan arrived in Costa Rica, you initially lived in Jaco. Of all the places in this country, why did you and Alan decide to start your journey there?
One friend of ours did a tarot reading for us about where we should go. And I don't necessarily believe in tarot readings or anything like that, but she offered and I said, why not? And so she said, well, it was something like, you know, Tamarindo could be good, but you get, it could be good or it could be bad. You know, there's something about deception here. So that was interesting. And then Jaco was like, oh, you'll make money if you go to Jaco. And I thought, okay, interesting. That's, I guess that's one more in the column for Jaco. And then, I had another friend do the exact same thing and cut almost the exact same reading. And I'm like, all right, that's a little weird.
You and Alan moved from Jaco up here to Playas del Coco just before the lockdowns began, I think you said, before we did this interview. What prompted the move?
My parents were interested in possibly moving to Costa Rica because, you know, they're older and much more affordable here. And I had looked up great places, you know, to retire in Costa Rica. And I think Coco came up as a really good place. And my parents came down and they just loved it. They loved Coco immediately. And I thought Coco was a much better place for them than Hakko was. So they had come down here to live for a little while and were needing some help getting settled. So Alan and I thought, well, we can go stay with them for a little while. And they had rented this nice 3-bedroom house. So we thought, okay, we'll go stay with them for a little while. And, you know, I was thinking maybe possibly it was time for us to move to someplace like Tamarindo, basically because Tamarindo has the biggest bookstore, used bookstore, that's a multilingual bookstore. And that was like, that was a good reason to possibly consider moving.
You're the only person in history who's considered moving to Tamarindo because of the quality of the bilingual bookstore.
It is. I am the only person, I think, in history who's moved to Costa Rica and looked for a beach town. And I have never once in my life been surfing. Not once. And before the lockdown, I kept saying, I'm going to plan a surf lesson. I'm going to take a surf lesson. I'm going to take a surf lesson. And then we wound up in Coco to just stay with my parents for a little while. And then as soon as I think we got here and it was like a week later, the lockdown happened. And my parents, in fact, I think were on one of the last flights home because their intention was to go home and put their house on the market and come back here. But then the pandemic happened, so all of those plans got put on hold, and we're in the house that they had originally rented, and we didn't necessarily intend on being in Coco, but it's wound up being a really good place for us, I think. And it's also the only place in Costa Rica on the beach where you can't surf because we don't have waves. But I'm actually quite okay with that because I love swimming in the ocean, and this is a perfect place for swimming.
Was there a moment when you looked at each other and you said, we made the right decision moving to Costa Rica?
Yeah, I think every time we turn on the news and see what's going on in the US right now, we continuously reaffirm that this was the right decision. It really was very serendipitous, and I feel incredibly grateful that we had the opportunity to do this. I know not everyone could just pick up and move to a foreign country. Not everyone can right now, and I feel very grateful that we came here and that we came here when we did.
I can say from personal experience that not everything in life in Costa Rica is butterflies and roses. Mm-hmm. Are there perhaps any less than savory experiences that you or your husband, Alan, have had since living here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, when we told people we were moving to a foreign country, a lot of them were worried about our safety. And, of course, if you come to Costa Rica, one of the first things you'll notice is there's bars on the windows, all the windows. This really kind of upset us when we first got here because it's like it doesn't, you know, it has a negative connotation. And we have actually been robbed twice in our own home. Once while we were sleeping, someone broke in and stole our computers and all of our technology that wasn't with us in our bedroom. My husband is usually up late with his laptop. So his laptop was in our bedroom, so they didn't get that. But I came down one morning and saw the door was open and the TV and my laptop and a couple other things were gone. That was really upsetting. And part of it was our fault because we didn't lock the door because we have this big locked gate around us. So we thought we were safe. But now we lock the door every night. And another time I had left, this was when I was in Hakko, I left the door open because it was, you know, warm day, cats were going in and out, and I was in the bedroom talking to someone on the phone, and I came out and there was a guy in our living room trying to steal my backpack and purse. And I walked over, I didn't, you know, it didn't quite register to me what was going on. I'm like, did we call a plumber or something? Did I forget that I have an appointment with someone to come over and check the smoke detector? What's going on? And then I saw he was carrying my purse and my backpack, and I'm like, oh, he's breaking in and stealing something. So I walked over to him, and I don't think he spoke any English, but I just put my hand on my backpack, which had my like wallet and computer and everything else in it, and said, excuse me, that's mine. And I had my hand on my backpack, and he had my purse still in his hands. And I tried to take the purse back, and he grabbed it from me and went running down the street. And I don't even know why I did this, but I ran after him. And then it occurred to me, like, I don't keep anything in my purse because it's such an easy target. I think I had like a lipstick that he stole. But that was really upsetting. That's another reason, part of the reason why we left Hakko, why I started looking at other places. And it wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't let that deter me from going back to Hakko. It was more like the house just was a little shabby, and we didn't have a gate, and someone stole our hammock out of the yard. And I was like, I would live in Hakko again. I would just make sure I lived in a place that was a little more secured. But those are, I think those are the two biggest problems we've had in Costa Rica. And I still wouldn't let that deter me from being here. It just means that you have to be very careful about making sure your doors are locked and you don't like leave your door open even when you're at home in the middle of the day. Because there are people around here who take advantage of others and will steal things. But, you know, as far as I know, I mean, obviously that happens in the United States too. So it's not like, I don't feel unsafe here. I never feel unsafe here. I just feel like, you know, my property might be a target, but I don't ever feel like I'm going to be the target of any violence. And it is people who are hungry and don't feel like they have other options. And, you know, so you've just got to be careful about your stuff. And now that I've learned to do that, I mean, I still feel pretty comfortable and confident living here and walking around at night by myself. And I don't really ever feel otherwise unsafe.
After living in Costa Rica approximately 2 years now, right?
No, I think it's been a year and a half, because about 6 months in Hakko, and I think we're coming up on 1 year here in Coco.
Could you and Alan see yourselves moving to another country?
I can. I love traveling and I love experiencing different cultures. I've definitely got like a list of places I would love to plop down for a year in each. And yeah, I think this experience of moving to Costa Rica, if anything, it's taught me that it's really not that difficult. It's not as hard as people think. And so I'd do it again over and over until I've, you know, probably seen at least one country in every continent. My husband feels differently.
How does Alan feel? I would love to hear Alan's point of view.
Well, I don't want to speak for him. But I think he just, you know, misses the United States and some of the comforts of home and living in a place where everyone literally speaks your own language. So I think he's intending on us going back to the United States when it's the right time.
Tell us a little about the Poetry Salon, your business. Uh-huh. And if you could tie in there a little bit about the two podcasts that you've got going as well.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for asking about that. So the Poetry Salon Cast is a podcast that I host with my friend and colleague, Kelly Grace Thomas, who is an amazing poet, author of the book Boat Burn from Yes Yes Press. And she and I interview writers who, you know, have books and writers who we admire, and we ask them about their creative process and what they do with a rough draft that wants to play rough. And we release those podcasts once a month now. And I think we're on season 3. If you're interested in writing or you're bored and you want to check that out, go ahead and find that at The Poetry Salon Cast or on our website, thepoetrysalon.com. And the other podcast, which I think is a little more relevant to this particular listenership, is called In My Happy Place. And it's a podcast that I co-host with my sister, Elizabeth Therese Hefner, who I think is one of the funniest people in the world. And she and I are just so completely different. So we talk about the different things that make us happy. And each podcast episode, we pick a topic and talk about our different views on it, our different strategies about, doing kinds of self-care and various other, like, you know, self-improvement regimens and things. And our very first episode is one where we talk about what is literally our happy place. And she and I have just such totally different opinions on what makes us happy. And a really good illustration of that is when she came to Costa Rica to visit, I was very excited to show her around. And I thought, oh, she's just going to fall in love with this place the way that I fell in love with this place. She's going to see all the beauty of nature because she's a big nature girl. She's going to love that. And she's going to see how affordable the housing is and how nice the people are and how great the food here is. I mean, we have just fresh, healthy food all over the place. And she got here and I immediately remembered that she and I are very different people. And all the things that make me happy are the things that she finds uncomfortable and invasive. So just everything was like putting her out of whack. She, you know, we went to our first Airbnb and she's like, what's the address? I'm like, oh, it's Costa Rica. There aren't addresses. And immediately her head just exploded. She's like, what do you mean no addresses? What? It's like I had said, there's no oxygen in this country. She's, how do you find your way? I'm like, it's very simple. You know, we'll find a nearby landmark and then the person who owns the Airbnb will come down and then we'll follow them and their pickup truck through the mountains and they'll show us where it is. It's very easy. But that was too much for her. The potholes really drove her nuts. If we had to wait, we had our rental car got stuck in the mud and this was in Arenal and there wasn't like a AAA right next door. We had to wait for AAA or the equivalent to come from, what was it, San Jose or Liberia, I think. And she just found all of this to be very unpleasantly surprising to her. And then I also learned very quickly that she has heat rage, which I didn't know was a thing, but some people when they're very hot environment get not only sweaty and uncomfortable, but just very angry. So on top of that, we were, you know, with my family and trying to take care of them and keep them comfortable. And she had taken on the task of being the driver of the rental car. So she just could not relax. And it was all very stressful for her. And I remember being in this is just such an illustration of how she and I are different. We were in this parking lot and going the wrong way as we were exiting the parking lot. And someone just very kindly, like, you know, tapped on the window and was like, you know, you need to go the other way. And she was really irritated by that because she's all like, it's none of your business. I can take care of myself. She has lived in Los Angeles for 10 years as well. So we're used to being in a, you know, situations where people don't go out of their way to like interact with you. So all of this, like, people just coming up to you and being nice and helpful was very strange. She was not digging it.
It's like, that's unacceptable.
I know. Like, oh, that's, I just kept trying to tell her, look, I know that it's different. It is an adjustment, but if you can just like say pura vida three or four times a day and expect that things take longer, but everyone's here to help you, like it'll be fine. Like just relax. You gotta, and I'm still struggling with this, but you know, coming from a faster paced city and everything, in a place where maybe you have more appointments and scheduling and whatever, like you do have to take some time to adjust and go, I'm going to do less today. It's going to potentially take longer. There aren't as many services and things that I can look up on the internet, you know, but there will be people here who are happy to help me. And just pour a Vita, you know, when you can do that, you can kind of adjust yourself to the pace of life in Costa Rica. And then it starts to become a little bit more, the norm for you. Like I wake up and I still kind of think, oh, this is weird. I don't have 8 appointments today. I have like 1 and I have this free time to go walk on the beach. Should I go walk on the beach or should I send out some emails, shouldn't I? I need to find something to keep me busy during this day. And I'm, you know, my New Year's resolution, I think, is to spend more time walking on the beach and having long lunches in cafes and talking to people and just, you know, really immigrating to and assimilating to Costa Rica for the time that I'm here and really enjoying it. So that's part of my intention. Well, after spending so much time in a very fast-paced environment, I have been really ready. You know, I think in a lot of ways, I've always been looking for like, where is the perfect place for me? But I've traveled a fair amount now, and I realize like every place has something good about it. And it's probably a better question to ask, where is the right place for me right now? Where have I been imbalanced and where can I go to get what I need for this moment? And, you know, after I've soaked up a lot of sun here and relax and learn to relax a little bit more, maybe I'll be ready to go to some other adventure to fulfill some other need that will arise, you know? But for the time being, you know, none of us really know what tomorrow brings or is going to bring. And so for now, and I think being in Costa Rica is a perfect place to really put this into practice, I'm really just focusing on practicing on the present moment and having fewer expectations and having fewer appointments and enjoying what's here and present. I keep hoping that I can trick or bribe or cajole a few more of my friends to come down here, because it is, it's just such a joy to be here.
Before we sign off, any last words for our listeners, Tricia?
Just one of the other advantages to being here is, you know, being in a small town, everyone knows everyone. It's harder to move to a foreign country because you don't know anyone. But if you're in a small town like this, it's also like, you know, everyone, you learn everyone's names and faces pretty easily. And that's another really sweet benefit of being here. And also everyone else here, I mean, half of the other people here are Ticos, so you get to learn their stories. And then the other half of the people are expats from all over the world. So it's like, you know, you get 5 or 10 countries in one. And that's pretty cool. Like you can sit at a cafe and hear people speaking French, Italian, German, you know, the people from all over the world who come here. And
our son Maverick has friends, but all kids between like 1 year and 3 years old. One of them speaks French with his mum because she's French Canadian. Another one of his friends speaks Afrikaans with his mum because his mum's from South Africa. Another one of his friends speaks Russian because his name is Boris and his dad is Russian, right? Another one of our friends, his mum is from Nicaragua. So, you know, he's got foreign blood. Anyway, it's just, it's crazy how many different little nationalities live in this one place. And it does add to the quality of life here because you're getting all of those different cultural experiences, exactly like you said.
A French bakery just opened up, it's Cafe Mocha, I think, next to Cafe Java. And, you know, I go there to eat croissants and speak French with Paolo and Aurora who run that. And I feel like, oh, I'm not in Costa Rica. I'm in France. And then I'll go to Java. And then I'm like, oh, no, I'm in Costa Rica again. It's just amazing. It's the best of all the worlds are here. As long as you don't mind the heat and the potholes. And if you can stand the heat and the potholes, just being here is one of my favorite things.
Grisha, thank you very, very much for coming on the show today. I'm looking forward to properly meeting face-to-face one of these days in the town. We have seen each other's faces, as we mentioned before this interview, but we've never actually met properly, so we will do that.
Can I ask you one thing before?
Absolutely.
Do you have like a podcast where you talk about your story of coming here? Because now I, in a normal conversation, I'd ask you your story.
Absolutely, I do. And it's not on our podcast. It's by a guy called David J. McNeil, who also lives in our town. He's a voice actor and he has a podcast called Cool Story. And he interviewed me 2 or 3 months ago. So that's about the most up-to-date version of my wife and I and what we do and our journey and whatnot. So if you Google Cool Story Podcast Malcolm Hill, if you type that into Google, it'll probably pop up.
Here's a sneak peek of the next episode. In episode 27, we sit down with Texan Terry Carlisle. 59-year-old Terry chats about the opportunities which brought him and his wife to Costa Rica, why driving is less stressful here than in the States, and why moving to paradise doesn't solve your problems.
This is not America. I am not going to try to make it like America. It's not, you know, Houston, you know, and all those things. It is Costa Rica. So, we come in with some expectations. Restaurants, you know, you want your glass filled with water, you know, the second it's empty. Sometimes it takes a little while. Sometimes it takes holding up. Yes. You know, it kind of takes that. But it does force you to kind of prioritize some of your expectations.
If you'd like to watch the video of this episode, go to YouTube and subscribe to the Move to Costa Rica podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, please rate, review, and share it with your friends on social media. For a full list of show notes, episodes to your inbox, information on becoming a guest on the show, and how to support the show on Patreon, head to www.movetocostaricapodcast.com. Remember, new episodes are released every Thursday by 6 a.m. Costa Rica time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, pura vida.